Anyway, that's the context of that article. He was quite impressed with the with the Sartre methodology and some of the concepts that we talk about. He also accused us a little bit about being overly involved with our computers, and I think to some extent it didn't come out quite the way it was supposed to come out here. And that is a comment that I made to him, but my comment was it had nothing to do with the real bettors and the people that are paying attention to the way these races shape up. But what I did tell him is that a lot of our players or a lot of our bettors within the Sartre methodology do get too confused or too tied up in what the computer is telling them instead of doing what Jim Bradshaw tells you to do, and that is make sure that it's just a horse race you're looking at. Because the horse is going to run against the horse, and it's not running against your computer. So always keep that in mind, that don't get too overly involved or too overly dependent on that computer itself. Because a lot of these races, trust me when I tell you, a lot of these races don't really have to go through the computer, in truth. And I think it was Bert Main that was mentioning earlier that in the Las Vegas seminar, we gave everybody a 3 or 4 minute a time frame in which they were to call this race. And virtually everyone was right. I mean, they had the right early pace horse, they had the right horses in the duel, they had the right presser, and they had the right position of these horses at the quarter pole when most of the race is decided. And you do the same thing. So don't ever lose track of what this is all about. That's briefly enough. I think I've explained the article. Anyway, it did all of us a little bit of good in terms of exposure.
Well, if you're going to applaud him now, wait till tomorrow when he really takes over. We're going to break here in 20 minutes, so I won't get into any of the longer presentations. But I'll have to admit that probably the highest IQ in Perko does belong to Michael Pozzola. He uses about 10% of it, but when you have that high an IQ, 10% is a whole lot. Michael can, when he gets serious, can put into words concepts that other people can't verbalize. So since we have just a little bit of time left, I'd like to divide that time between kind of an introductory remarks based on concept. Let's stick with this concept. Tom's talking concept here. He's talking about the fact that the second fraction is of absolute monumental importance. Not only is it important to us, but it's important because the public does not possess it, and that is the key. Tom has converted some mainstream handicappers who were great riders, secondary winners, into winners purely by exposing them to the second fraction. But Michael Pozzola has a slant on the entire viewpoint of racing. He takes it from the idea of the seven steps of consciousness, but translates it into good old horsey talk. So you know precisely what he's talking about. He's not being ephemeral, not even being effeminate. So I'm going to give Mike about 15 minutes here, and then we'll give Dick about 15 minutes, and we'll take a break and get into some longer-term detailed explanations. Michael?
You know, the methodology has evolved and is evolving. It's never been a static thing. And for those of you who've been around for a while, it's almost like hitting a moving target a little bit. Wait a minute now, I just got this variant down, and now you give me a program like Synergism, which does the variant. And I just got Synergism down, now everyone's talking about energy or UltraScan. You know, how does it all fit together, and where does it all go? Well, each of the new steps that we take as a methodology builds on the last one. And there is an orderly progression to it all. That's really quite neat. I mean, it starts with phase one. I don't know, for those, many of you, the first exposure to the Sartre methodology is phase three. But phase three implies there were two steps before that. And phase one is what Andy Beier sets forth in his article. It's just those fractions, the ticks, 22 and 3. And let's say he was a length back, that makes 22 and 4. That's great. That's great if you just want to get an eyeball idea of the race. You know, one of the biggest dangers that I noticed when I, along with Jim, developed the PBS numbers, I really thought long and hard before I published that article, and I had many, many serious conversations with Howard about it, because I knew that what would happen is that people would take those numbers and use them as the sole criteria for their contenders. Anyone do that? Just automatically take their top five PBS or try that at one point? Yeah. Very successful or not?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
220.
Yeah, no, the truth of it is it's a very, very powerful technique. But it cannot be used in isolation. That's the whole point of this, that none of these techniques can be used in isolation. Like these fractions. Okay, that's one step. That's phase one. That's phase one. Now, on the evolution of human consciousness, we can think of it in terms of that's our sleep state of consciousness. You know, we have three states of consciousness that we're used to dealing with. Sleeping, represented by Dick over there sitting. Sorry, Dick, didn't mean to wake you. Sorry.
No, first state of consciousness.
Yeah. Ah, dear. Ah, yes, the Iceman coming. And then there's dreaming and waking. Those are the three that we're used to having. So the second phase of the methodology had to do when we took these numbers that looked like 22 and 1 and 22 and 3, and we converted them into numbers that Andy Beier called eccentric, 57.8. Okay, this doesn't look like a fraction anymore. But it's a little more accurate way of getting the relationships between these numbers in feet per second. Now, phase three, the big quantum leap, when we finally moved into being awake as a methodology, into our waking state, is when we compounded these fractional velocities into rankings, early pace, sustained pace, average pace. We were finally able to produce a method that could get 63% winners and could have positive proficiency. That was phase three. Note that at each of these stages, what we're dealing with is velocity. Whether we express it in 22 and 1, or 57.4 feet per second, or an early pace rating of 56.8, we're all talking about velocity ratings. Now, there comes a point where in the human consciousness, you move past waking, dreaming, and sleeping, and you go into the transcendental, which is beyond those three. There are lots of names for it. You know, those of you who have been brought up in the Christian context have heard it, the kingdom of heaven within. Those who are more Eastern bent, you know, it's the nirvana, it's the state of unbounded bliss consciousness inside it. So many names for it. But the step of the methodology that represents that transcendental step was ultrascan. Many people who are new with the methodology don't have experience with ultrascan, and that's a shame because it's really, I think, before energy, the most brilliant thing that we had to offer. And it's brilliant because it looked at the percentile relationship between how fast the horse ran himself and the pace of the race in which it ran against. So you could take a horse that ran far off a pace of 22, 44, 109 and compare it to a horse that just wired the field in 23, 47, 114. And because the horse wired the field at those slow fractions, the percentage between the horse's pace and the pace of the race was 100% at each fraction. And ultrascan, when you let it automatic adjust, would give that horse a higher rating than 22, 44, 109. It's the kind of thing that caused handicappers like the speed handicappers in New York, to whom I showed ultrascan readouts 5 years ago, and mainstream handicappers like Tom Brohammer to hold their heads and shake their heads and say, okay, not with my money, though, because it's a bizarre concept. And the reason that people had trouble with ultrascan is they put slow horses into the computer. You know, Jim would look at some of the horses they put in and say, well, sure, it lost. It's a slow horse. Well, Jimmy, how did you know it's a slow horse? It's running slow times, you know. It's because people did not pay enough attention to the velocity component and throw out the horses that didn't have a chance in the race, that could not meet the matchup, that could not run against what the projected pace of the race was. But once you got past that very trivial step of knowing who could run against today's pace, and it's trivial, it's really not a hard thing to do. I mean, you could project paces time after time. I wish they took bets on projecting pace of the race. I'd love to say, can I have $1,000 and 46 and 1, please? But they don't do it. They want to know who finishes front, you know, at the end of that, and that's a whole different thing. But UltraScan was the big step. It was the big step away from velocity. In every serious conversation I've had with Howard in the last 2.5 years, the thing that he keeps echoing is that velocity as a viable factor in handicapping must begin to take a back seat. Because what is happening now with incremental velocity is the same thing that happened back in the mid-70s with final speed numbers. After Andy Byer's book Picking Winners came out, the mutuals that were able to be garnered on horses with good final speed numbers dropped precipitously. Why? Everyone knew about it. The value of that information had gone down. Now we pick up copies of Racing Action and we find a 5-part article on the Sarton methodology and feet per second. And, you know, that's kind of shocking. It even had a little computer program in there you could type into a handheld computer. It's like, oh, mutuals are gone. Well, that's the very cornerstone of the Sarton methodology, that incremental velocity, those three chunks that Bert talked about. But it's only the tip of the iceberg. It's only where we begin. UltraScan was the taking off point. But the hard thing about UltraScan was it did not deal with the slow horses. If you put a slow horse into UltraScan, it would look like a world beater. Ask me how I know that. I bet enough of them. Real American money on horses that had less of a chance of winning than you in that race. I mean, you could have outrun some of these horses. They were just horrible horses. And Jimmy would laugh. UltraScan got that, Mikey? Well, you shouldn't put it in. That's why you. So now, there was the challenge then. How could we take this, you know, these insights from UltraScan and combine them in a way that was true to both of the approaches and produce a superior result? In the realm of human consciousness, it's what is referred to as enlightenment, or when the person awakens. Okay, it's where that transcendental state, the part of you that doesn't change, that's kind of, you know, in the background all the time, is really lively and coexists with all the rest of your waking and dreaming and sleeping. What does that have to do with horse racing? Well, it has to do with this. Could there be an approach which used the percentile relationships of UltraScan in a way that was true to the reality of the race, the kind of the hard-boiled pace figure, Tom Brohammer, this horse is a lot better than the rest of these horses. Could there be an approach which combined these two and produced superior results? Well, I think the answer, after at least 2.5 years that I know of, and quite a while before that on the part of Howard, is the new approach of energy. We like to think of energy, the new energy program, as phase 5. Now note that just as every other phase included the ones before it. I mean, UltraScan used fractional velocities, but it used it in a very different way. It used it in percentile relationships. In that similar way, energy still uses the fractional velocities. That's the very starting point. And it uses the UltraScan percentile relationships. But it combines them in a way which not only allows us to tell which are the fastest horses in the race, that's easy. We can give you a racing form. You can open it up. And we can say, look, pick the 2 fastest horses in this race. It's a trivial matter. The question then becomes is, can those fast horses win in the context of today's race? And this is where we started getting into the very esoteric field of variegating a race. Variegation is a term that Jim coined. It means the shading or coloring of the race. How will this race be colored? Yes, here's a tremendously fast horse. It's a tremendously fast horse who is usually 10 lengths back at the second call and then puts in the Silky Sullivan kind of third fraction that makes it look like a world beater. But in the context of today's race, if he's going to be 10 lengths back and it's a sprint at Saratoga, kiss that horse goodbye. He's just not going to win. How could we tell that without referring to months of detailed track profiles and regression models? Could there be a procedure right from the pace lines of the race that did that? We already knew it could be done with variance because Bob Purdy did that. Bob Purdy came up with a procedure where you can put in 5 or 6 pace lines and come up with variants which are very close to being as accurate as a handcrafted daily variant, which takes hours and hours of work and takes the kind of keen eye of a Tom Brohammer. Now, do I think a handcrafted variant will get you, you know, better results than the automatic results of synergism? Yeah, probably. Marginally. Will the average mutual be different? Yeah, in the favor of the automatic adjustment. But at least we knew synergism was a breakthrough program, and that at least we knew it was possible to make a variant from the pace lines itself. So our thinking was, well, if we could do a variant from the pace lines itself, why can't we tell how this horse race is going to run from the pace lines itself? And I'll tell you one thing that working with the energy program, and by working with the energy program, I mean that I don't consider my day complete until every race in the Eastern Edition has been handicapped. It's a lot of work. I don't sleep an awful lot. I had a chance to do that. But I have run literally thousands of races and thousands of horses through energy and through the energy generator part of both the velocity energy generator and the energy generator. And there's a very simple fact that comes out of using that, and that is that a horse runs his race. That sounds as profound as Jim Bradshaw telling you, one horse goes out and the other tries to catch it. Okay? It seems like very, very simple on its face. But knowing that the horse runs its race is a very important thing. That means that a horse will sometimes not run a typical race, but that's very, very rare. So if we know, if we're careful, that we're not taking a race that's completely out of the ballpark for the horse, and we take 5 or 6 or 7, and with energy you can take 8 or 9. Put in horses' typical races. The algorithms are such that they use insights from energy, insights from the whole phase 1, 2, and 3 approach, and do it in a way that allows them to coexist and tell you not only who the fastest horses are, but how the race will shape up, whether it will go to the early presser, the sustained presser, or the sustained horse. And which of those horses are stronger in those areas? How many of you have had days, how many of you who are very careful with keeping their track profile, with knowing what the median energy is and the lengths behind at a distance, and knowing that from your Brohammer model or your regression model, that early pace wins sprints, sprint after sprint after sprint, and you get to the track, and the first sprint that comes up is won by a sustained horse. Oh my gosh, what do you do now? The next sprint that comes up is won by an early horse. Well, was that first race aberrant? Or something happened to the track? What do I do? Energy answers that in a very elegant way. And Dick Schmidt is probably the best witness, is the best witness to that. We literally sat at a race book in Laughlin, Nevada, when we were first working on this variegation of a race. And the first race we ever did with energy variegated, now I forget the details, but it variegated a Santa Anita route to go early, which it had not gone in like the last 3 weeks. And Schmitty laughed, his usual, you know, maniacal giggle that he does. And of course the two early horses won. No more ice. The very next race was a turf race at Santa Anita, which had been running very early for some reason. But the race variegated sustained, and the sustained horses won. Now, guess what? It doesn't work 100% of the time. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here talking about this stuff, because we're still developing it. But